Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's EcoLogic. My name is Ted Flanagan. I am your host. And for this episode, we're joined by Mona Newton. She's been for the past 9 years, she's been the executive director of CORE, the Community Office for Resource Efficiency in Aspen, Colorado, a fascinating community-based energy model. We're going to talk about some of CORE's works, her works at CORE, including coal mine methane recovery projects. Pretty cool stuff. Hey, Mona, welcome. Welcome to Flanagan's EcoLogic. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you. Nice to be here and nice to see you too, Ted.
Nice to see you too. It's been a little while. And I see through the window behind you that I presume you're in Aspen right now.
I am. And, you know, it's funny. I love Aspen in the summertime because it doesn't usually get very hot. But I got to tell you, it's hot today. I think it's 89 degrees, maybe even 90, hottest I've ever experienced in my 10 years here.
That's right. And probably very few people have air conditioning because of that, right? You just don't need it generally.
Generally, you don't need it. I'm afraid people are going to, you know, zoom down to their local hardware store and buy the, you know, their off the shelf air conditioner and start jacking up their electricity use.
that's the downside, but it's hard to argue against getting that kind of comfort when it gets to those temperatures.
But oh, absolutely, especially if you're not well or you're older, and I mean just in general trying to think and work. So
yeah, I know out here we have a lot of big focus on cooling centers for folks, just places to go. But now I don't see any color in the leaves yet, the trees. This is my September, a little later in September, maybe my very favorite time to visit the mountains there. Is that right? The leaves have not really started.
They've just started higher up. The aspen leaves are starting to hit a little bit of golden yellow. Some of the lower shrubbery is starting to turn some red. The fireweed is all flowered out, and those leaves are turning a beautiful purple color. And the berries are ripening for the bears. So hopefully they'll head higher up and head out of town.
God, you're making me. I just love the mountains. Nicely described. Let's go way back before we talk about CORE and your energy works there. But I see on your resume, what is it, Northwestern State, Oklahoma?
Yes, that's where I went to college. Mm-hmm. Small school in the panhandle. My father was from Oklahoma, and so I ended up going there, just sort of a small school that I chose to go there.
So you were not living in Oklahoma. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in northern New Mexico in a small town called Española. So I'm a fifth generation New Mexican.
Really? Okay. And then school in Oklahoma, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I know.
So what did you study in college? What was your thing?
So I studied political science. That's where I started out. I was really interested in politics, interested in public administration, how the government works. And so I gravitated towards political science.
And then you went off to University of Denver. Was that grad school?
Yeah. So then I was interested in international studies, and I went to DU, the University of Denver Corbell School of International Studies, and I studied international relations there. And then I'll just launch right in.
But before you do, remember, my daughter Sky went to University of Denver, so I have.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I love that. I love that school and that campus.
Yeah.
Experience.
Yeah. It was great. I took an energy class. So this is how I got on the path that I got for my my career of many years, decades. And yeah. I took an energy class, and it was not just a few years after the energy crisis. And you're going to love this. This is the softball back to you. I read Soft Energy Paths by Amory Lovins. Yeah. And it made so much sense to me that I kind of shifted my career and thought I really want to be in this energy field and energy arena. And so off I went. Yeah. And I didn't end up getting into international relations after all. I could have, but yeah, I stayed in Denver.
Well, now it sounded like before you worked for the governor's office, it sounded like there was a private sector gig in there.
Yeah. Well,
Were you promoting solar or something at that point, or?
oh, yeah. I've been in the public sector, the nonprofit sector, and the private sector. And so, yeah, I've had some days. Actually, I started out weatherizing homes for low-income people. That's where I really cut my teeth, is in the field, so to speak, and then got into some policy and ran another nonprofit in Boulder. And I worked, it's called Resource Central now. And we worked on one of our claims to fame is really water conservation, and then developing a program for used building materials and salvaging those used building materials. So resource conservation. And then I
Wow.
went on to the private sector and did some solar and wind work for a few years.
Well, the wind thing that struck my interest was some community-owned wind model that you were working on.
Yeah, it was really pretty fun and challenging. And I'm sure you know Randy Udall.
Yeah.
And I was transitioning away from the center at the time, and there was a lot of development of wind power, and we were having these conversations about, large ownership of wind farms. And so we started talking about, well, what if the community wanted to invest in a wind farm? How could we do that? So I went off, since I had just left that position, I went off with some funding from Western Resource Advocates and a few other entities to find out if we could develop a community-owned wind model, not like the one in Minnesota where farmers invest in one turbine, but we were trying to develop a wind farm. And we went pretty far down the road with that project. We had an agreement with PPM, who was a developer at the time, and Xcel Energy. And we had investors lined up, and we called it Quixote Wind. Maybe that was our downfall. But and we were able to get everything into place. Unfortunately, that project didn't come to fruition only because there was a wind turbine shortage that year that we were set to build the project. And our agreement with the wind development company was if their contract was decreased, we would get cut out. And unfortunately, we got cut out with that project.
Oh,
So,
what a shame. How many households would have been involved in that project?
well, we actually had 10 a 10 megawatt project, and what we were seeking were larger investors. So while they were small investors, they were larger investors. We were talking with Boulder Community Hospital, the University of Colorado, Western Resource Advocates at the time. Trying to think, this escapes me, but we had sort of $10 million investors who would be willing to put that money in to develop the project.
Oh, it's so interesting. And of course,
Yeah.
you know about the whole project in Copenhagen, in Denmark, Copenhagen, and the Middelgrunden, the wind turbines there that I
Yeah.
just love the image of this, auditorium, this high school gymnasium, full of people that were all investors
Yeah.
in that part of that wind farm there. And of course, in Denmark, there is a lot of community-owned wind, and seems like we could use more of that.
We could really use it takes some, it's gonna it takes some revision of probably the investment model, and I haven't explored it lately. Maybe I should do that. We haven't really explored that, but it just takes some revising of our investments models and what is required and or how we shape it. So we were, yeah, it there's still an opportunity there, I think.
It was the next step going to the governor's office of energy resources
Yeah.
in Colorado.
Yes. Yeah. So I was lucky enough, and I was in the spent about 5 years working in the governor's energy office, under 4 years under Ritter, and then a year under Governor Hickenlooper. So that was an exciting time.
What were the highlights of those years? What was
Ooh.
going on that was
We started out, we had Well, I can still remember this. We passed 57 pieces of legislation during the 4 years that Ritter was in office that supported clean energy. It was really getting the clean energy economy off and running because that was his platform, and that's what our charge was. So we had that opportunity to execute on that. So we developed a number of pieces of legislation that included net metering requirements, that included utilities to start developing clean energy plans. We actually started with the first climate action plan for the state of Colorado. thinking about how do you reduce carbon. Working with communities was a highlight for me because I spent a lot of time in the field working with communities and helping them to develop their own clean energy plans, their own climate action plans, better building codes. We really launched a lot of work with building codes that lead us where we are today. I mean, that was, 10, 12 years ago, but it was still just really on the forefront of getting all the communities up and going. And just spending time working. And I think it was really a lot of the legislation that we passed that really are sort of the cornerstone of where Colorado is today. And I mean, the other piece that I think was really pretty exciting was attracting new businesses to Colorado. If you remember, 2008, we were sliding into a huge recession, and Colorado really went in. And by attracting new businesses like Vestas, a wind turbine manufacturing company that not only builds the turbines, but the blades, but the towers, and then brings in the companies that builds the components, and a number of companies that have expanded and are very large today, we were able to create a lot of new jobs. And that was the big buzzword of the time, is clean energy jobs. So that was really exciting to see because, as I said, I mean, we did have the federal dollars through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to work with, but the policies that were in place at the time through the Governor's Energy Office, the Economic Development, International Trade, and then Local Affairs, you're really, really kind of working in sync to develop all kinds of policies and programs to keep the state afloat in that time of the recession, and then also create this whole new atmosphere and economy for clean energy.
That sounds really fulfilling. Sounds really
good. It was exciting.
And tiring, and all of the above, right? It's but 57 bills and all those jobs. I'm hoping this segue is going to work. Something really appealing drew you out of Denver and took you west to Aspen. Is this segue going somewhere?
Yeah, well, it's true. At that point in time, I was thinking this has been a great opportunity, and it was really fulfilling and somewhat tiring. We worked pretty hard. I think most of us can say, I ran into a colleague this past Friday. I don't know if this will work, but I ran into a former colleague at the GO. He's now head of sustainability and environmental policy for Xcel. And he said, oh, I miss the days at the GO. And I think that a lot of us, we had such camaraderie, we had such collegiality, but when a governor changes, sometimes the team changed. And I had always been wanting to live in a mountain community, and I hadn't had the opportunity yet. And I'd spent a lot of time in the mountains when I was at the Governor's Energy Office working with communities and whatnot. And so the position at CORE, Community Office for Resource Efficiency, opened up. And so I thought I'd throw my hat in the ring. This could be an opportunity to have a legit job in the mountains and do what I really love, which is energy efficiency and renewable energy work.
And they selected you, and you were there for 9 years. And describe CORE. And I have longstanding knowledge of CORE because Randy, Alice Hubbard, I would call her, but Alice Laird, who, yeah, had a hand in sort of crafting the original, proposal to start the organization. And then Randy Udall, who I work with at Rocky Mountain Institute and also involved with Solar Energy International together. But describe what CORE is, because I just think it's a really cool community-based sort of energy model.
It is. And that's also what drew me to to the mountains was CORE, because it is so unique. I mean, CORE is 27 years old. It was formed in 1994 by a community-based group of forward-thinking citizens who came together and saw the impending climate crisis, in all honesty. I mean, in 94, Rocky Mountain Institute was leading that conversation. And CORE, a group of citizens came together and said, we need our own energy office here in the Aspen Valley in Pitkin County. and put together this nonprofit. And it's unique for a number of reasons. It's unique because the board, and the board is changing now a little bit, was primarily made up of elected officials for 26 years. And those elected officials came from Pitkin County, City of Aspen. They came from Basalt, Snowmass Village, and then eventually Carbondale included. And now the board has expanded and includes Eagle County as well. So it's primarily elected officials, which I found very attractive because you're working directly with policymakers. You're not, you know, I love nonprofits and have run a different nonprofit that where you work with the citizens board that's passionate and about the mission and making things happen in their community. And when with CORE, you have this opportunity where you're at your board meetings, you're sitting around talking with policymakers. They can take that information back directly to their fellow policymakers, city council, board of county commissioners, and say, this is what I learned at the CORE board meeting. This is what I think we should be doing. And they can have a lot of influence in their community to direct policy. And I found that very appealing.
By virtue of organizational design, right?
Yes.
By having a structure, whatever their laws are, their bylaws are, that set up the structure of the organization, they set it up this way that you'd have elected officials that, as you're saying, would have a greater level of influence back in their communities than sort of a mid-level staffer who might fill in for an official every now and then.
Right, or a very ardent community member who still has to go to city council and then make their case for something to happen. I mean, a nonprofit, when you've got the board member right there, you can have that conversation, and they can help set policy.
I mean, one of the coolest things that I think the CORE did, and you used all this money, was this thing called REMP, right? With this, what is it, Renewable Energy Mitigation
Program. Yes, the renewable. And that was another lure for me was, I mean, you've got Stephen Knipe, the retired building official, hates it when you call it a carbon tax. But in effect, that was sort of one of the first carbon taxes in the United States, because it says if you build a home that exceeds a certain size, or if you decide you want to install certain energy consuming devices like pools, hot tubs, snow melt in your driveway, then you have to offset that energy consumption by those devices by paying either a fee or installing a solar system on your home or business, because it applies and it's part of the building code. It's not just a voluntary effort. It's part of the building code. And that's also very unique, getting it into the building code like that, because when you pull a building permit, you decide how you're going to design your home. Here's the building code, and REMP is a part of that. And that's pretty
unique. Was that City of Aspen, or was it all of Pitkin County?
It's both. It's City of Aspen and Pitkin County. They're two different building departments.
But in terms of that REMP, is that that's Pitkin County?
Both of them. Yeah, both of them have that.
Of course, a certain amount of that money that was collected needed to be spent to come up with valid offsets in the community. And CORE's job was to do just that, right? Weatherize homes and that kind of thing to create the savings. Is that right?
Yes. And Randy made the initial promise, if you will, that CORE would offset that energy two times and that carbon two times. So if you paid into that fee, your carbon, for example, of your snowmelt, if it generated 600 pounds of carbon, we would have to offset 1,200 pounds of carbon equivalent for 20 years. So we had to find the appropriate types of offsets, which included energy efficiency and renewable energy, to offset that carbon. So it was really a win-win for the community, because the beautiful thing is that then that money comes back into the community as well. It's an economic development driver, because you pay into it, then I decide to install a solar system on my house and I can get a rebate from CORE because you paid into the program. Or maybe you install solar on your house instead, and so then you're offsetting your carbon. You don't pay into it. And there was a lot of incentive. There was a lot of conversations with the contractors about the program because they didn't want to eliminate the opportunity to build a snowmelt system or install a driveway or a heated driveway or pool for their customer. And so that gave them two options, install the solar or pay the rent fee. And then CORE was charged with coming up with the programs that would use the rent dollars to invest them in the community.
I didn't know about that doubling, that 2-to-1 factor that Randy had promised, but that is so admirable and really exciting. That what a great, you know, for those people that the question, in fact, I was on the phone earlier today, somebody talked about offsets and how, oh, they're hard to validate, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, when you're doubling, right? When you're doubling, it's sort of unquestionable. Another project I want to ask you about is much more recent, or I know REMP is still going on, but much more recent is that Aspen or somebody installed a 5-megawatt solar system, ground mount solar system, as you come into Aspen along the highway there, or as you fly in, you kind of fly in over it. And I know that Steve Childs had this vision, and one of your county commissioners had this vision for that, a friend of mine, and a lot of people had a hand in putting that together, the utility, Holy Cross Energy. What was CORE's role in that project?
I feel like we played an instrumental role in that project, in advocating for it, on its behalf. And at the time, it was a great opportunity for me to work with youth, because they're very concerned about climate change. And there's a group of the Aspen Environmental Youth Committee. And so we reached out to them to ask them, would you be interested? What do you think about this? And so CORE really rallied a lot of the folks in the community to speak in support of the project, because a lot of times a project will happen without people knowing about it. And we wanted folks who are going to be here a long time to know about it. So we really helped advocate for it. We also partnered with POW, Protect Our Winters, who helped advocate for the project so that we could convince the county commissioners that we had a lot more advocates for it than there were opponents.
And there were opponents, weren't there?
There were quite a few opponents, yes.
Somebody saying building a 5-megawatt ground mount anywhere near Aspen when real estate prices are that valuable. Now, I know they built it on, what is it, an old spreading grounds for sewage sludge or something like that.
Right. It's owned by the Aspen Sanitation Consolidated District. And they were very interested. And you're right. Steve was he was really the person that came and said, hey, I brought it up at a meeting and I said, you know, Holy Cross Energy is going to be issuing a request for proposals for a solar project. Wouldn't it be wonderful if it was in Pitkin County? And so Steve Child sent me a few sites to investigate. And I did a little bit of due diligence, having spent some time in the wind industry, and vetted those sites. And it was a sort of a confluence of synergy. A person I had worked with in a former wind company called me and said, hey, do you know any sites that are available? I said, yes, I know of one that's pretty ideal. Here's the parameters. He worked with the company that bid on the project. And so, I mean, it took 4 years to get it done. It was not an easy effort, but it's powering, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 900 homes, Aspen homes. So
very, very impressive. Let's talk methane, coal mine methane recovery. What's the, MMC, mine methane capture, I guess. And I've just been impressed by this. And I guess our friend Rick Heady, our mutual friend Rick Heady, who I worked with at the Institute, and now he heads up the Carbon Accountability Institute, he says there's 48,528 abandoned mines in the United States that may be leaking methane. And so, I mean, which is just a scary, scary thought that there's that many mines. And sounds so complex to capture the methane out of an abandoned coal mine. Can you speak to that, please, Mona?
Yeah, so that's kind of, I was been thinking about sort of you've given me an opportunity to sort of reflect on where I've gone over the years. And it's like, I like solving difficult problems. That's related to the environment and related to energy. And so in Pitkin County, we had for about 50 years, a coal mine complex of the Mid-Continent was operated by Mid-Continent Coal and Coke. And they mined about 22 to almost 23 million tons of coal out of this complex in Pitkin County. And they knew all along that it was a very gassy mine. I mean, there's a book that's the history of Coal Basin, and that's where the project that we're working on is and what we're trying to do. And they kept talking about how gassy it is. And in 2016, the state of Colorado had Ruby Canyon Engineering conduct a study of various abandoned closed coal mines in Colorado, where they identified about 10 mines, and at the top of the list is Coal Basin. And so there's about 3 mines there that they estimate are leaking, or about 5 mines actually estimate they're leaking about 9,000 tons of methane a year, which is equivalent to 100,000 cars on the road, or, you know, it's a lot of methane. And so what we are wanting to do, and I'm working with a gentleman, Chris Caskey, from Delta Brick and Climate, and we want to capture that methane, draw it very slowly out of the mine, capture that methane because it's leaking from a lot of different vents and portals, is gather it and bring it into one location, draw it out of the mine, and either oxidize it, or potentially generate electricity with it. So our next steps are to conduct a flow test. And with that flow test, then we can better determine how much methane is actually leaking out of there. And then what kind of quality, because like any resource, you need something that's of higher quality to do something better with it. We need the highest quality methane to produce electricity, for example. If it's lower quality with other stuff in it, then we would probably oxidize it, which means flaring it, but not using a flare like an oil and gas.
Right.
Well.
Now, the Somerset mine, wasn't it the Somerset mine that's sort of on the way to Paonia from Carbondale there, and the Aspen Ski Company, and Randy Udall was involved in this as
right.
well.
Right.
Precedes this. Now, would the gases coming out of that mine sort of give you an indication of the gases coming out of the coal basin mines? I mean, they sort of not that many miles apart as the crow flies, I wouldn't think.
Right. They're about 40 miles apart. That's interesting. I haven't asked Chris that question. And I don't know for sure, because I think it's a different type of coal that came out of the coal mines in Coal Basin. It was more of a coking coal. The coal that they used at Coal Basin was used at the steel manufacturing plant in Pueblo. That's where it went.
Yeah. So in this case, in the coal basin, the project that you're working on, and I know that CORE has had this big role, and you've been leading the charge there. You sort of envision perhaps two sources of revenues, right? One would be if you're able to generate, like they are at the Somerset mine, and actually generate kilowatt hours and make money doing that. Mm-hmm. And the second would be to selling carbon credits or offset values.
Is that right? Yes, that's
probably the bigger play right at stake.
It probably is, because you can generate, even if we're not able to generate electricity, if we only flare it, you take the methane down to carbon dioxide, which is carbon dioxide still bad, but it's not as bad. And so with that improvement in the pollutant, you are able to generate a carbon credit, a valid carbon credit too.
I still use the factor of 43, that one molecule of methane, CH4, has 43 times the global warming potential of one molecule of CO2. But I've heard lots of different numbers, but it's a huge difference, right?
It is a huge difference, right. And so we would be able to sell carbon offsets, and which are done right now with the project at Somerset. It does generate electricity. It does, and they have a flare nearby, and that generates carbon offsets as well. So it's a project that can do both. And who knows, we'll see what we're able to do, but we could at least, I shouldn't say at least, we can generate, we're hoping to be able to generate carbon offsets.
Right. Wow, that's so
Yeah.
exciting. Now, with that kind of potential, I would think that you would do this all again and again. Are there people that are doing this, that are setting up these mine methane capture projects all over the
Well, it's challenging. I mean, that honestly, it's really challenging, and I'm hoping that we're going to be able to do more of this. I'm still boggled by the 48,000 abandoned mines. I'm gonna because that's a huge amount of methane, and as we know, methane is something we really need to tackle in the next few years in order if we're going to get a handle on global warming. And so we can learn, we can share what we're learning with other entities, with other communities, and how to go about it. I think we are particularly challenged because our project is challenged because not only is it the land's on public land, so it's managed by the Forest Service, there's BLM Minerals manages the minerals, and we have a private mineral owner. So, and it's an abandoned closed mine. So it's a little bit more challenging than probably, and I would advocate for legislation or regulation, or maybe not, but somebody who's closing down a mine to start tackling it right now. Like, don't wait. Don't wait till you've closed Craig. Don't wait till you've closed the mine in other communities to start doing this kind of work.
Yeah, no, it sounds incredibly important, incredibly complex. And you said you like challenges, and there you go. But
Yeah.
as I read about this coal basin mines, these five abandoned mines, 280,000 metric tons of CO2 equivalent per year. That's half of Pitkin County's entire greenhouse gas footprint per year. So that's just a huge value. So this work is crazy, crazy important. Are there other big pieces? We're kind of running out of time, but are there other big pieces that of core that you wanted to mention, or your next steps that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I think one, just going back to core, I think one of the pieces that we've been able to do that I want to share with you is that a lot of times is about REMP. And a lot of times communities or political leaders or community leaders feel that, well, you can't do this because it's only in Aspen. It's Aspen with all these wealthy. I just want to share the city of Lakewood recently adopted, after a few years, they adopted a REMP-like program for their community for new construction. And I know that Summit County is examining how they can adopt it, how that can be adopted in their county. Eagle County has something light, I want to call it REMP-light. REMP-like. So it's a possibility that other communities, and at one point, well, not one point, but the county in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which is, it's not Jackson, it's escaping me, they have adopted a REMP-like program. And so in Idaho as well, near Sun Valley, and that's a resort community, and Telluride as well. And I know those are resort communities, but Lakewood is sort of the first out of the gate bubble, if you will, that's adopted it. And so I think that's really important that it is replicable, I think. And for me, I feel like it's interesting you bring up carbon offsets. It's an area that I've been interested in. I used to sell RECs back in the day from a small wind farm with Eric Blank and Community Energy. And I think carbon offsets are going to have a role to play. And I think we need to make sure they're legitimate offsets. So that's a realm that I'm interested in exploring.
Yeah, very good. And final question, how do you keep balance? I ask this of everybody that I interview. Everybody's passionate about their work, and they dive in, and often they get in over their head and for a while. But how do you keep balance?
Well, that's part of the reason why I'm still here in Aspen, and what drew me here is nature and just getting out in nature and appreciating what we have and all the beauty of walking among the trees. And then I love exploring the world and seeing what else is out there. Recently, I went to Tanzania to expand my carbon footprint, not really, but to have a chance to look at what it's like to be out there with the wild and the wild animals and see all of that and snorkel off in the Indian Ocean and explore coral that's still alive. That's what really renews me. I can get pretty depressed seeing dead trees and wildfires and that kind of thing. But it's seeing nature and all its beauty and glory and the abundance and what it gives back to us and what we can give to it. So, and I don't think of nature really as an it, but yeah. So to me, that's what renews my spirit.
Yeah, that's really, that's fantastic. Congratulations on your accomplishments. Thanks for what you're doing. Take your vitamins, keep taking your vitamins. And you're very articulate. And I love what you've just said about nature and how that, I mean, that connection is so profound, obviously, to you and to me too. So good stuff. Thanks, Mona. Have a great day.
Hey, thank you, Ted. I appreciate it. Love to see you when you're in town again.
Look forward to that.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.